You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
All right, welcome in. Fox and Faust, the podcast. We've got a bevy of listener questions because we didn't get a chance to get to those last week. We've got an interview with Kelly Rudy coming up. Jim, you had a chance to chat with the former Kings goaltender, and we'll have that conversation a little bit later on in the podcast. But the news, as it always is in our modern world, is about COVID, and specifically about the NHL, which started the season pretty well, but has now run into a problem. And today, this being Thursday when we take this podcast, they have taken the action to amend some of their protocols. You and I both spent a lot of time reading the COVID protocol document, Jim, coming into the season. I think we're both pretty well-versed in it. So here are the changes that the NHL is putting together with outbreaks, and I think it's fair to use that word, in New Jersey, Buffalo, Minnesota. Vegas is just coming off of one. But the NHL needs to find a way because they're getting a lot of games postponed in a short period of time. So here are things that are going on with the NHL. They are asking teams, A, to deploy portable air cleaners on benches in order to improve indoor air quality, basically, you know, portable air filters. B, players and coaches are no longer permitted to arrive at the arena more than an hour and 45 minutes before puck drop. This is to reduce the amount of time spent in their offices or around one another. C, teams are being asked to utilize or create additional locker room space for themselves and their opponents. They're trying to have more than 6 feet, if possible, between players at each of their stalls. Teams have about a week to come up with plans to accomplish this. They might install portable stalls, outside rooms. It might just be a makeshift thing. The Blue Jays had to do that in Buffalo. And then the other thing that's being considered, or at least being worked on right now, is glass behind the bench. They are removing those big advertising boards, essentially, as they are right now, behind the bench that used to just be clear glass with fans right behind them, but essentially to try to improve airflow behind the bench. So with all that in mind, Jim, and with all the words that I just used, and with all the outbreaks that we have across the NHL, what is top of mind with for you this week?
The first thing that comes to mind when you just went over that list is I'm assuming that the National Hockey League is preparing once again for a playoff bubble. You want to get there. I think they will get there. Once they do get there, will it include all the 16 teams? Not sure. But once you get down to 8 or 4, then do you go into a bubble to ensure as much as possible the health of the players, first of all, but then just the ability for each team to ice the best possible personnel without having absences due to COVID. So that's just in the back of my mind right now. I'm sure that's probably part of their plans when they started this season. I'm sure they've gone through many, many different scenarios, and I think they're thinking of every possible scenario. But to me, again, it's just, if we can get to that playoff, will they and can they, and when will they go into a bubble?
Here's the thing that I'm kind of interested in is the concept of being cleared to play, because there have been a couple of games now where a team has had a game, and I'm looking right at Buffalo and New Jersey here, right? New Jersey Devils had 4 players, I think, at the time that were put on a COVID protocol list. And supposedly the rest of the team was cleared to play, right? You know, if you're test negative, all that, and you're assumed you're cleared to play. So all these adjustments that are going into game day, and we've talked about it before, is all about mitigation of risk. You can't eliminate it. It's about mitigation of risk. But my assumption, when you take the ice, when you're on the bench and when you take the ice, is that you are ready to play hockey in the same way you've always played hockey. And I'm wondering, or I'm a little bit concerned, that by looking at these measures, like removing the glass or putting an air filter on the bench, are we then starting to assume that it is not safe to be on the bench. And that's a big reach.
Yep.
But I look at that and say, well, I thought we were safe to play if everybody's cleared to play.
Outdoor buildings, NFL. From what I'm hearing or reading, and is that it has been very difficult to prove that players are transferring COVID during games. The actual playing of the game. Now, again, they have the advantage of playing outdoors. So that probably helps certainly with the filter systems that are used indoors. Again, what came to mind to me, Alex, is when I read the list of the Minnesota Wild players, to me, it was their leadership group, which may have more meetings than other groups on the team. Maybe they have more face-to-face meetings. I mean, it was Foligno went down first, mm-hmm. then it was Spurgeon, then it was Eriksson Ek, then it was Bonino. It was all of these, you know, the guys that are considered the veterans and maybe a part of a more of a leadership area there. So that came to mind, you know. So yeah. All of the stuff you're talking about, you know, the NHL looking to crank up maybe testing again, you know, the PCR tests they do, which take time to get back, but they do it every day. So once you get into it for like a week, now you're getting results back every day and you're probably keeping up as close as possible. But can they institute again rapid testing along with the PCR testing?
Yeah.
You know, just to stay on top of it as much as possible.
The NBA did that. And the NBA is going through a stretch, I believe, of 1 week without a single player added to their COVID protocol list.
Yep.
And maybe that's the solution, is just adding another layer.
You know, and I'm sure they're going to do it. It's very interesting. And again, I think it's based more on the NFL, but it was interesting that right now, which changes what every minute, right now, they're having a difficult time saying, okay, this offensive lineman who went up against this defensive lineman, that they were transferred that way. No, limiting the time, arrival times, stuff like that. That's where they're looking at more of that. Face-to-face, sitting down together in a room is probably where most of the transferring is taking place.
And they're, you know, as part of this idea, they are trying to or encouraging teams to make as many meetings at virtual as possible. It's interesting just going to the Kings here and what they did at the start of the year. For many of you who have been to Toyota Sports Performance Center, the pond, that smaller rink, they basically turned that into their video room by having all these chairs spaced, you know, far mm-hmm. apart and the big screen. Like, they turned this gigantic room into their video room because, you know, they don't have, a space that can accommodate that many people at the moment with current social distancing requirements. And I don't know how many other teams have that option.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm looking at it like, maybe this is just what every team is going to have to do.
Have you? We talked about, or I just mentioned it the other day when we were chatting on another subject, is I drove to Toyota Sports Performance Center and they are building an outdoor rink at this time.
Yeah.
An outdoor rink for two reasons. First of all, to make it safer for clinics to take place. It'll be small. It won't be regulation size. But enough where you could do individual skill work, I bet, on the ice. And then what you're doing there also is you're separating those people from entering the building where the Kings and Rain practice and Rain play. Yeah. So you're kind of doing two things there. You're allowing, hopefully, and this is all as far as, you know, all the permits, all of the OKs have been taking place with all, you know, El Segundo and all of that. But it's just a matter of also making sure that fewer people are entering the building.
Crux of the matter for me is this, and then we can kind of get onto other hockey topics of the week. The crux of the matter is twofold for me. One, it's nice to try to create in your game day environment, whether at home or on the road, extra steps and extra layers of protection to try to mitigate risk. And that could be testing. It could be, you know, the way partitions are done. It could be, you know, air filters on the bench. Okay, that's fine. But the second part of it is bringing COVID into your environment, this will require a doubling down, just like you've heard from every other public health person, for every player, every trainer, every staffer, every single person who touches the part of the team and is part of that group one or group two, every single person, you cannot bring it into the environment. Because once it's in, I'm just, this is my crude opinion here, but whatever mitigation you try to do, it's not enough. Because at the end of the day, when you drop the puck, you're expected to play hockey, and it's a close contact sport. And when you're on the bench, you're in close proximity. No matter what you do, you are putting yourself in potential harm's way. So it's about all the steps before you get to the rink.
I find myself
NHL's going to conquer that.
You've been there, Alex. I find myself, I haven't quite done the Tom Cruise thing yet, where I rip everyone, but you've heard me, 6 feet,
right?
Reminding people, right, on our crew. And it's just natural. The first thing is sometimes you actually do forget, you know, you just kind of, you get into a work environment and you've got to go here and you got to go there. And certain people have to be in the same area, but you know, I know they're probably getting a little bit tired of my reminders, but that's just, it just has to happen. You're just trying to make it as safe as possible and remind, that's all.
I would go a step further and say, yeah, okay, the mitigation is important in a workplace environment, but don't even have a chance of bringing it, like limit as much chance as possible of bringing it into that environment.
Right, and we like, do testing.
Like at home, I'm not even talking testing.
Okay,
I'm talking at home. Like I have been virtually nowhere. Like, you know, even with outdoor dining back, like we haven't done that. You know, we haven't seen friends. Like any activity we've done is outdoors. You know, even around other people, it's all outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to put the onus, I don't want to put the blame on anybody in particular here, but in the NHL right now, with anybody in that group one, group two environment, as much as it sucks, like that's kind of where it starts, right? And it's, you know, it's people you live with, and you have to contain it there before you get to the rink. That's my point.
Yeah, and I'm making the assumption, Alex, that they are more concerned with the people they live with than they are with their teammates.
Yeah,
I mean, of course they care about their teammates, but I think family probably comes first, and that's where you're trying to make sure at home that you're as safe as possible.
It's hard. It's hard. When we walked into the season, what did we say? It was going to happen. There is going to be disruption. Embrace that this is just part of our reality. The Kings will be affected at some point too. They already are. They already have two players in COVID protocol, right? But just know that we will likely have games disrupted due to this at some point. It's coming.
And the question that should be banned right now, should be banned from every media person's mouth right now is, hey, coach, how are you dealing with the players out of the lineup because of You know, it's none of the coaches want to use it as an excuse. They understand adjustments have to be made. Mm-hmm. They don't want to address it, but we keep asking it day after day after day. You know, I guess it's one of those things, I guess, that has to be done. If you don't check that box and then you find out later that someone is missing and you weren't aware of it and you're doing a report on the game, and so you need to just ask that question, but I know certainly coaches are getting a little bit tired of answering.
Yeah. Here's the other part of it that I'm curious how you approach it before we move on to other topics here. When somebody messages on social media, and I've seen so many, but you know, when college football was starting up, wow, they need to shut it down. We shouldn't be playing. And you know, when then, you know, the NHL and NBA, and even going back in the summer when baseball had their outbreaks, oh, we shouldn't be playing, they need to shut this down. How do you respond to that? What's your answer when somebody says to you, you shouldn't be playing right now?
I think that the risk factors are well known. I think that if we are not endangering the general public, then I think you play the games.
Yeah.
As long as we're not endangering someone else from outside the NHL, some teams are, they have fans right now, and they're, you know, limited, but they're starting to sprinkle certain teams around the NHL.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is my concern of, you know, we got to make sure that doesn't lead to more breakouts for the people watching the games. But I know there have been, I know there have been some reports of some athletes who get long-term effects if they do get COVID. Then they go through, you know, they go through the normal phase of it, but then they have some type of a longer lat. But I have not heard that being enough to warrant a shutdown. So it's
everybody's walking in on their own volition, right? You're walking into the situation, accepting the risks.
You accept the risks. And there is a balance factor. The number one priority is health. But then there are industry, economics. There's a lot of other things that have lesser priority. They're not as high on the list, but they're still involved. And that's why, after reading the protocol document that you talked about, which is being amended and strengthened, shall we say, I felt it was one of the best organized, developed, drafted documents I've ever read.
Yeah. I mean, it covers everything, but obviously they're trying to make it even better. Enough of this for the moment, because if we weren't talking about, you know, COVID this, COVID that, we'd be talking about the Rangers situation and what a week it was in New York with Tony DeAngelo and their situation. When we were there last February, it was like the Tony DeAngelo situation. Yeah, he had baggage, and yes, he had a reputation, but it seemed like for whatever reason, things had cleared up, and it was working. He was among the league leaders in points from defensemen last year in the National Hockey League. He was right up there with Quinn Hughes. And then Rangers get off to a bad start, and DeAngelo has an altercation, and apparently he gets clocked. And I like the term that my wife used, that is Eastern Bloc justice from Mr. Georgiev. Basically responding in kind to whatever remark Mr. DeAngelo made.
Responding unkind to the in-kind.
Exactly. What do you make of this, Jim?
You covered it. What I make of it is this, is that DeAngelo will play again in the NHL because he is a highly skilled player. I believe he only has one more chance, though. That's my opinion. I think there have been whispers. I have not heard any specifics, but I'll go back to even when he was with the Coyotes. I was hearing whispers of this guy can play, but how he works with others is a concern. And so, you know, again, if he was a low-skilled role player, he would not be in the league right now. But you're willing to look the other way. You're willing to offer him assistance professionally to deal with the situations he's dealing with and perhaps learn how to deal better with those situations. But I do believe his next team, if things don't change, will be his last team.
How did you deal with... Or how did in the locker rooms you were in, if you had a teammate that was a problem, either because he would just run his mouth or he would put the team in bad situations? Because there are instances, you know, like he's going to start some scrum where he shouldn't be, and somebody has to step in and say, hey, you know, we're not going to step up for you. It's like, how did you handle that?
I think it's usually done in a group session. The proverbial team meeting. I don't think it's addressed in that meeting specifically. It kind of rears its ugly head, whatever the issue is, whoever it's with. And then when you come out of that meeting, that's when it is addressed directly with the person involved. I don't think you'd do it in front of everyone originally because you're walking on eggshells there a little bit. You don't want to make that mistake, and that maybe you're overemphasizing a certain factor that maybe the other guys on the team don't feel that it's as big an issue as you do. But then when you're in that team meeting, you do get the concept. You do get the feeling. And then you take another step. So I don't think it's a one-step thing. I don't think it's a grab a guy and put, slam him up against the wall. And this is, no, I don't think that really happens. I think fights happen in practice, but those are for on ice things. A guy gets hacked in the back of the leg and, and you just kind of lose it for a second. But I know what you're talking about is different than that. I think nowadays, just my opinion, players have a tendency to go to a coach or a GM more so than we did when I played. When I played, I think it stayed pretty much among the players and you didn't go. But I think nowadays it's just, again, I'm not agreeing or disagreeing. I think it's just different, the way players deal with their agents and how public agents go with some news, which mm-hmm. in the past just never did. And then, the GM gets involved and players going up and talking to GMs and coaches happens way more nowadays. The communication level is so much better nowadays than it was. But then, to your point, a player problem in the dressing room can be dealt with now by going to a coach or a GM because players are more comfortable doing that.
It's interesting because you hear all the time about a players only meeting or a closed door meeting or something like that. I've always wondered what it's like to pull back the curtain for something like that. And is it just the captain of the team steps up in front of the group and says, we've got an issue? Or in this case, if you've got a single player who seems to be at the forefront of an issue, do you have just the leadership group come together with that one player and say, hey, you've got to get your act together? Obviously, front office got involved in this case, in the New York Rangers case, but there have been so, we hear all the time, especially if a team's struggling early in the season, of a players-only meeting. And I've always wondered what it's like to watch one of those and the dynamic of it.
Most of the ones I've been involved in had to do, to be honest, more with tactics. And are we playing the right system? Are we capable of, do we have the right personnel, to execute what we're being asked to do because it's not working? That's why you're having a meeting, it's not working. I think in those team meetings, you may get a concept which is brought up dealing with a specific individual, but I don't think
they don't call them out by name.
Not in that meeting. And then, right. Like I say, the next step is, okay, yes, a leader, a friend, a closer friend, a guy who hangs with, you drive in with a game with, maybe the captain comes up to you and go, I know you drive in every game with Johnny B. And, can you have a talk with, just pick his brain on what's going on here. I don't see a lot of confrontation. I do remember we had a veteran player join our team and from another team and coming from a very successful franchise. And we ended up having we were struggling 1 year, which happened every other year for teams I was on. And we had about three team meetings in a period of 2 weeks. And at the start of the third team meeting, that veteran player just said, we're having too many team meetings, So
that's great.
Bottom line, right? You got to take it onto the ice.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you realize, you realize via the standings that it's not working. But like I said, most of the team meetings I've been involved in were more like, how are we approaching things? This isn't working. And I think it at least starts with more off ice things. Again, we've had the effort discussion before. And there is, believe me, to keep 25 guys distraction free is very difficult.
Yeah.
It's very difficult. At some point you have a distraction, but again, in 2012, from afar, I'm watching a Stanley Cup champion team. And I realized that the number one factor was no one cared who got the credit. And those players, those Kings players, were not distracted by anything. And that's why they won. If a guy was unhappy with his ice time, he didn't let it be known, certainly didn't go public with it. And by the time you get to the playoffs, everyone. And happy with it might not be, you accept it and you apply yourself 100%, and that's the only way you're going to win. But the things we're talking about right now are things that creep into a locker room that that create distraction. And to me, that distraction creates lack of focus, and that lack of focus in turn looks like lack of effort. Believe me, when you're on the ice, you're not trying. There is a physical nature to the hockey, to a hockey game, that makes sure that you are 100% focused, or else you're going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be different than other sports. Individual
I don't
sport,
think
like golf,
I think it's
tennis,
very similar. You know. I think, you know, it's very similar to tennis, actually.
Yeah, okay.
It really is, because tennis, in a team sport, especially that like hockey, when you have kind of the distraction going on, it might manifest itself, as you described last week, in a shift that didn't go well.
Yeah.
Or in some other,
my head was so far from the game that I found myself on the ice during a shift, almost not realizing where I was.
Right.
That's how much lack of focus I had during that one shift.
Right. And I think that's what's fascinating watching tennis sometimes, is because it's an individual sport, gladiatorial sport. If your head is not in the right place, you will see instantly where it manifests itself. Bad habits, bad right. shot selection, et cetera. Like that's where it really comes to the fore. But it applies in every sport. It applies in team sports.
But my point, Alex, was that in a body contact sport, if you lose that focus, you are now opening up the chances of injury.
Oh yeah,
way more than you are if you're in an individual sport, golf. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, so you're not focused. You can't get the backswing correct, and you're not, you know, your grip pressures. That's not going to injure you. In hockey, you can get injured because you're going to be on cloud nine during a shift, and then you're going to be on cloud nine after that shift
for a different reason. One other thing I wanted to get to this week, and then we'll dive into your interview here with Kelly Rudy. I find it interesting, the taxi squads, and obviously it's a COVID related thing in some ways, the reason why those taxi squads exist, but it seems to have created a different problem for some teams. I don't think it's affected the Kings as much, because right now they're dealing with some injuries and they need to utilize the taxi squad actually for some fresh bodies in some ways. But on some teams, it's created this seemingly added competition for roster spots. Like the NHL roster is typically 23 players. And there are obviously only 18 skaters and two goalies who can appear in a game. But now you've got 27, in theory, 27 to 29, who you're carrying on your roster. Let's be real about it. They're not active necessarily, all these guys on the taxi squad, but they're with you. And there's more competition for roster spots. And I've seen, between the Dubois thing, which was completely unrelated to taxi squads, but we've seen Sam Bennett in Calgary supposedly ask for a trade. Victor Mete in Montreal, we know is a good player, but he's just been, you know, scratched. They have a lot of numbers there. And I'm seeing around the league, like there's this weird extra competition for roster spots. And I'm wondering kind of what impact it has on teams and the team dynamic this year.
I'm wondering, the thing you just brought up, Alex, is a new trend. Are we going to see more players go public with trade demands?
Yeah.
You know what? Just because it's, and the players you brought up, you know, Laine handled it quietly, but it was known he wanted out. Dubois handled it more publicly. Mete is in a number situation on a team that is playing fantastic.
Right.
The team loves him. His salary is so low compared to the value he brings that they want him around, but he's gone. I should be playing more ice time somewhere else. Bennett is a player that has, you know, great reputation in the playoffs, but to get there, he has not necessarily been considered a consistent player during the regular season. It used to be, and probably still is, the biggest reason for demanding a trade was the Mete thing. Numbers just aren't working for you on your team and you want more ice time. The other ones, Laine, nah. Dubois, no. They're impact players. They're getting ice time. I know Laine said he wanted to play with Scheifele and, you know, on a higher line, but he was still getting some ice time. It used to be time on ice. Now you have players who, based on a lot of different things, including collective bargaining rights, economics, life-changing money, I like to call it, as opposed to, you know, When I played, I made a great salary, but I never made life-changing money. All those things, now it just seems like players are more comfortable with going public. And I'm concerned with that. I'm not too old-fashioned. I bring it up most of the times. I was the player rep for the Kings. I fought for as many rights as we possibly could at that time. Half the time we were going against a gangster in Allen Eagleson who went to jail for it. But that's a whole other story.
One of these days I got to hear it.
It's incredible how unfortunate it was that the NHLPA did not have enough leadership from the players. And to be honest, to me, the biggest change was the influx of college-educated players who were not afraid to ask the tough questions. I was afraid to ask the tough questions when we got into a meeting with owners because I just was unsure. I didn't have that formal background and training. I thought when more of the college-educated guys who graduated from college became NHL players, that they weren't smarter. They just were not afraid to ask the questions in a corporate setting. And that changed things. And that's what we're seeing now, I guess. The players have shifted again. Yeah. To the point where they're not afraid to go public with movement.
Yeah. Well, especially what'll be fascinating is there is a squeeze because of the flat cap. So
no question.
You know, there's, if a team, you know, can't afford a player, yeah, or if there, you know, there's an opportunity to change scenery.
Dustin Brown brought it up the other day, and I mentioned it before the season started. I felt that the biggest issue with taxi squad would be players on the amount of players on the ice during practice. And how do you manage that? And I think, you know, Dustin mentioned it the other day. It's a little bit weird sometimes. You got all these guys out there and everyone's trying to get their work and you can't get work done after. You can stay on after, but it's a logistical issue for a coach to design and operate an effective practice when you have so many bodies.
Yeah. It's an issue that will be interesting to see if there's any sort of evolution as we get closer to the trade deadline this year with the squeeze in terms of roster and cap and, you know, competition and then the border. And like this was my pick at the beginning of the year for the most fascinating thing to watch would be the trade deadline. I want to move on here. We have a great interview this week. You had a chance to chat with Kelly Rudy as a part of the lead up to the reverse retro night. Kelly and Cal had a good conversation on Fox Sports West, but you know, Kelly Rudy, longtime King and one of the great goalies in our franchise's history. Set us up here for this interview. What were you guys chatting about?
It's, you know, I took advantage of that opportunity to get a little bit more of Kelly's time. And, you know, short but sweet, but just recognizing, you know, Kelly's position in our sport and how he has a chance to watch perhaps a bigger league perspective than we do. And, you know, I took it easy on him. You know, first question, I just said, you know, give me your five best goalies in the league. That was it. So mostly about goaltending. Kelly, if I can, your eye on goaltenders in today's game. It's always tough to pick one or two. If you were to, you know, five guys out there that really catch your eye, maybe technique-wise, maybe compete-wise, but anything, just as a goaltender looking at today's guys.
Holy cow, Foxy.
Yeah, top five.
Right off the get-go, you're going to challenge my brain on a Sunday afternoon. I'm going to go with some of the usual suspects, the guys that really stand out for a lot of reasons. Vasilevskiy, for sure. Right. By the way, Jim, I just found this out last year. I don't know if you're aware of it, and you might be. He grew up catching with his left hand.
I did not know that.
But because where he grew up in Siberia, they couldn't get the proper equipment for him. So somehow he had to convert to go catching with the left hand, the more conventional way.
Right.
I can't imagine the difficulties in doing that, right? Like, wow. Seriously. Yeah. Like, ask a baseball player, to catch with the opposite hand and learn how to throw with the opposite hand. It just makes no sense. That's unreasonable. Wow. And then I'll go with Hellebuck, although I don't think Hellebuck is playing quite as well to start this season. Rask, for sure. Rask, for his consistency, and seems to always be the kind of guy that can go through a lot of highs and lows. And much to my surprise, There's a lot of questions about Rask in Boston. Some of the fans, but you know how that goes. You know, right. The fans are, they have their questions about him. I don't think they truly appreciate how great he is. I'm going to say Markstrom. I'm a big, big fan. Calgary made a great signing. I said about 2.5 years ago, Jim, on our Hockey Night broadcast that, yes, Markstrom is a National Hockey League goaltender. I didn't know if he'd ever get to be a number one. And then I apologized on the air last year on a Saturday and said, okay, I'm wrong. He's truly proven in the last couple of years that he is a bona fide number one. Who am I missing now? That's Freddie Anderson. I like okay. Freddie. He takes a lot of heat. Carey Price, I've got to say, he's in that same category. I think those are my five or six, and maybe you could help me. I might be missing one or two. By the way, just so I don't offend Kings fans, I am the biggest fan of Jonathan Quick forever. I just don't know if he's in that same league right now, and mm-hmm. that's not to be dismissive at all. But I just think that John Gibson's in that category. I think he's a remarkable goalie. That's the one thing about this position now, Jim. It used to be the weak link on a team. And now, in most cases, it's the strongest position they have.
Let me ask you about something they've been trying to crack down on, which is, again, goaltender equipment. And they've done.
Yeah.
I'm seeing more seven-hole goals now than ever, you know, under the arm.
Yeah.
Is that equipment just kind of getting smaller?
Yes, I think so. I hope so. You know, I've been saying this for a lot of years. I love the guys. I love watching them. I wish I would have played that same sort of style, but I wish I would have had equipment that was as protective as they have now. But in most cases, the equipment they wear right now isn't for protection. It's for bulk.
Right.
And that's the problem. And you and I both know it, that some of these guys, you see some of the goaltenders out of their equipment and they're extremely lean. And then you look what they appear to be in the net with their equipment on and they're huge. And that has been a concern of mine for a long time.
What about short side high? It seems to be another area. Like when I played, I never ever even thought of shooting there. Now right? It's like, that's the target.
It's an epidemic. The amount of goals that go high short side. You're so right. Now, you know what I'm seeing, Jim? In the last, say, year and a half, goalies are standing up a little bit more often on some of those shots. And I know there are some goalie coaches out there trying to encourage that, not just automatically drop to your knees. Because the one thing, just from my standpoint, you don't want to give free goals away, right? So high short side, that is an area that, yes, on occasion you'll get beat there, but it shouldn't be at the regularity that we see it now. And so I do think in the next couple of years, we're going to see goalies starting to stand up just a little bit more often and having a little bit more patience. I'm seeing that trending right now and with some of the top goalies. So I think that might eliminate some of those high short side goals that you're talking about.
If I can end with this, Kelly, you mentioned goaltending coaches or for any that you had or guys you work with, what did you want to hear from your goaltending coach and what didn't you want to hear from your goaltending coach?
I couldn't, I didn't want that conversation in the intermissions. I know that there is a trend to do that. That was that, to me, and I had it one time. And you and I think we're on the same team, the 86 World Championships yep. in Moscow. Mm-hmm. And the goalie coach on that team came in every intermission and talked to me. And it was information overload for me because I'm a guy that I already try and gather as much info as possible. And an external voice for me was too much noise. But I definitely think all the other conversation is fantastic. I was really lucky in LA to have Cap Rader, and Cap and I had a great relationship. And Cap was very honest with me. So when I was struggling, he'd definitely tell me what I needed to work on. But he's also great at providing tapes of all my saves. So most people back then, I don't think were doing this. But after every game, I'd get a game film and I'd go home and watch it. Or maybe the next afternoon, I'd watch it. And try and find out what I needed to do better or differently. The other thing is, what was really great about CAP is that in our crease movement drills, every single day for a practice, you do crease movement drills. And he gave me some great advice early on. It's not the speed in which you do the drill. It's how you just have to do the drill properly. So take your time, do it properly. It's kind of like a golfer, I think. The mechanics are so important, but it's not the speed in which you do it. It's just do it at the speed in which you're doing everything correctly, so all the habits are the right way.
All right, that was awesome. Great chat between you and Kelly Rudy, who is, I think, one of the best analysts on TV, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet. Obviously, he's one of the regulars on Calgary Flames games. That's where he lives right now. I'm going to take the opportunity, since we've got about 15, 20 more minutes, to do some listener questions. We didn't get a chance to do them last week. We were chatting with Trevor Moore, but I think it's good to dive right in here and see what we've got. Actually, you know what we didn't talk about was when we first had our experience calling games off a monitor, and we had a question from at Biff Plays Hockey. What was your biggest adjustment in terms of calling the games off a monitor when the Kings were on the road?
Yeah, it's the biggest adjustment is the play, things happening away from the actual game camera. So we see the game camera like you do on TV at home to all our listeners and viewers. And so goaltenders being pulled, goaltenders leaving the net for a delayed penalty when we don't see the, you know, most of the times if it's the action ref, the ref closer to the play, you might see his hand go up. But if it's the back referee making the call, you don't see it. And usually when that happens, that play happened away from the puck. So we don't get to see it live, so we don't recognize it. And again, I remember I caught myself in the first game we did, the road game, where the Kings have six skaters out there. I caught myself saying, oh, that must be a delayed penalty. Yeah. And it ended up being that. And so that's the biggest issue. For those out there who don't give it a lot of thought, and I don't ask you to give it a lot of thought, you have to understand how much more difficult it is for Alex as a play-by-play guy than it is for an analyst. Most of the time when the analyst speaks, you know, I've already seen the play, or I know a replay that's coming up, or I've pre-drawn a telestrated play. When the play-by-play guy is calling the game, this is real time, this is live, there's no second chances. And that's where it's difficult. It's more difficult for the play-by-play guy to catch everything, no question. But
it is.
I don't think he missed a beat. We've done it on radio now. Now we've done it on TV. And a little easier on radio because you can lie.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say.
They can't see it.
We can kind of fib it a little bit. Yeah. I mean, the only thing that's different is sometimes, and it's the worst thing you can do as an announcer, is you make assumptions. Like, you know, I can't see the puck when it's along the near boards. I'm only going just by the body language of the players or whether the puck is in or out of the zone, let's say. Does it just go over the blue line? Well, they've gone back to neutral zone. The puck must be out of the zone. We've been able to get kind of some extra angles, including one that shows the entire ice surface from like a bird's eye view. So we can see when the little dot goes over to the bench from the goaltending position. Oh, the goalie's pulled. All right. Or even a perfect example, when there was a review or a challenge, you know, we didn't see it at the time because we were looking at on our regular program feed, the same you get at home, the Kings bench. But I saw in our secondary angle, oh, the referee's skating over to the penalty bench. All right. Okay. Well, that must mean that there's something going on there. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's other than that, I think the speed of the game can get a little bit wonky, right? Because you can only anticipate and assume so much without seeing it live, but we're making do. I don't think it's
one thing that we've done differently, Alex, as a broadcast, and some handle it different than others, and we do it sometimes, not all the time. Some groups do it all the time, but we take the actual audio call from the official.
Yeah,
because if you're the home team, you probably have a better idea of what happened, but maybe the visiting team doesn't. So by showing the ref, it actually gives everyone a better chance to understand what happened at the time.
Yep. I agree. It's tough, but it's doable. Here's a question from Esper, who asks, I'm curious how scheduling works at Staples Center with how many teams playing there at one time. How does scheduling work in terms of who gets to pick home games and who gets first priority? I don't, in COVID time, I actually don't know how this works. I think in normal times, what, Lakers usually get
It changes. It changes from year to year. Usually they have a rotating basis. Most, you know, Kings have Thursday, Saturday. Lakers have Friday, Sunday. Clippers have the, you know, different. And then, you know, they've played the doubleheaders before, which is, which allows you to do that, you know, be more flexible. But it is, from what I understand, that one team gets a priority a year and that rotates each year as far as priority. But basically, each team has their own nights, the nights they're known for playing their home games on. Just, I don't have proof of this. It's just a story that was told to me. But just to give you an idea of how difficult it might be, because of the multi-purpose use of Staples Center, I was told one year that the Kings handed in 45 dates to play 41 games.
Wow.
So there's no flexibility there at all. Where a single-purpose building, for instance, like Edmonton, for 41 home games, they could probably hand in 100 dates. And so the schedule maker has to do that. And then, you know, yes, coaches, Kings coaches complain about the schedule at times, but then sometimes it's just a factor of being in a multi-purpose building where you don't have as much flexibility.
Yeah. I can only, but I think it's just as bad for, you know, the teams here in market to try to figure out how the puzzle pieces are going to go together. I can only imagine what it's like for the league to try to work out that schedule.
Yeah. And it is easier now though, Alex, because we do have Anaheim, we do have San Jose, we have Vegas now. You know, you have closer teams that you can work things around. And I know the NHL, you know, most teams, when they do come, they play all the California teams. Some years they can't. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And, you know, I hear people, well, why didn't they play this game here? Well, there is a reason for that, because a certain building in a certain place just is not available. And they had to make do with the best possible.
Mm. It's tough. It's even tougher right now to try to get everybody on the same page with scheduling. All right, that's a good question. Here's one from Tom Furman. Other than your own, which one California wine would you pick if you were on a deserted island?
Oh, that's fairly simple for me. Marcassin. Marcassin.
I don't think I've had. Have I had this?
I don't believe so. It's they make both Pinot and Chardonnay. It is quite expensive.
That's why I haven't had it.
It's very difficult to get. I'm just actually, as we're talking, I'm looking at some of the prices. $599 for a bottle.
It's a little yep, above my.
It's a little
price
up
range.
There. So, but you know, I've had the opportunity to try it through friends. I've never purchased that. That's out of my league. But in all honesty, I had it. It was a vineyard called Zio Tony. So Uncle Tony's Vineyard from Marcassin, a Chardonnay. Had it about 15 years ago, and it was nectar of the gods.
Mm.
It was so, so good. But that, if I'm stuck on a desert island, Marcassin's where I'm going.
Hopefully you have a corkscrew to use it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it won't do you much good. All right. Here's one from some guy who named Patrick O'Neill. Patrick O'Neill.
Yeah.
Patrick?
I've kind of seen him before.
Yeah. I've seen him in my mentions a couple times. What do you do when you pick your on-air attire? Do you struggle with selection? Do you enjoy ironing?
Huh.
Many questions here.
Easy question for me. I don't struggle with it because I go, Susie, and that's how it's done. And then I actually on the road, and I know Susie will just say this is a complete bold-faced lie, but I don't mind ironing. Again, we don't do it now because we're not on the road. On the road, we have to iron my shirts.
Oh my god!
Now,
gosh.
I don't necessarily iron the sleeves like she would, because the sleeves are under my jacket, so you're not going to see that. But the
collar, man, you got to do the sleeves.
The collar and the front part is in the back. It's done. You know, we do take our jackets off when we get on a plane later, so I don't want to be complete bum out there. But no, that's Maybe it's because it's become part of my game day routine on the road. It just kind of, I guess I don't enjoy ironing, but it's become part of.
I think it's therapeutic.
Yeah, there's like, something to it.
Yeah, I got to get this crease out, and it's.
You know what I normally do, Alex? When we check into a hotel, so we play usually like, even like a back-to-back game. So we'll check into the hotel at 2 a.m. I will iron my shirt for the next day. That
at 2 a.m.
Yeah, that's when I do it. God. I just want to get it done. It's over with. Unpack, iron my shirt for the next game.
I've got better things to do at 2 a.m, and they involve sleep. And ironing my shirts. Although I know some people, like, they need to put everything away. They need to unpack. They need to do that. Otherwise, it's like an OCD thing. I don't know.
You've upped the wardrobe this year, haven't you?
I have. I've upped and I've lowered the because I haven't worn a full suit yet. I've just been wearing like a sport coat and slacks. And they're not even slacks. They're like the traveler type pants. That like, because they're only shooting us for the waist up. I'm not walking around a rink with other people. And, you know, it's just us. Yep. I'm wearing sneakers. I like you. One of these days, we got to get you wearing sneakers to the game. Got to get you on that. You've got the more comfy dress shoes, but
yeah.
My process involves usually I will pick something out and I will ask Carolyn, and she will either say that looks hideous or okay. So it's a veto process that's involved. And
okay,
I do iron
okay
my
is shoes. Good. Okay is good.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So yes, but I still agonize over what I'm going to wear. I don't want to wear a coat that I've worn a couple times recently. I don't want to wear a tie that I've worn recently. I don't want to wear a shirt multiple times. Like, so I try to keep it,
I know I had a lot of questions on the tie I wore, and I've worn it for most of our throwback.
Oh yeah, the
games,
King tie. Yeah.
First
yeah.
retro game. In all honesty, and that's my fault. I cannot remember. It's been a while now. And hopefully if whoever did it is listening, they can contact me through Twitter or whatever. It was a gift from a Kings fan. Hmm. I don't think they were mass produced necessarily. I'm pretty sure he got it done custom. So it's a navy blue tie with
forum blue.
Gold crown, yeah, but gold crowns on it. And it really... It does give me a special feeling to wear it. And it was really good the other night with the reverse retros because of the you know, there is more of an allegiance to that era. And,
yeah.
And the tie kind of fits that. But it's a tough tie to tie. It's not as long as normal ties.
Yeah.
It's the fabric is thicker than normal. So it's difficult to really get a decent knot in it.
We need to get you as an answer to the Technicolor Dreamcoat that comes out every New Year's. We need, or on a special New Year's even, we need to get you like a purple, a true forum blue,
yeah,
sport coat.
I've gone out there before, and I've said it. I'm a purple and gold guy.
Yeah,
I know it's forum blue.
Yeah, I know.
But I know if there's a lot of people. There are some people that don't like.
It's purple. You're calling it what it is. It's purple. There's no blue in there. It is purple. Maybe they only called it forum blue because they ran out of dye. Yeah. I don't know.
Jack Ken Cook could do just about whatever he wanted to do.
Exactly. Yeah.
If it was forum blue, it was forum blue.
Yeah. Brandon Burson asks, so he asked for plural, what are your go-to karaoke songs? I'm going to just narrow that down. What is your go-to karaoke song? Singular.
Wow. I don't know if I've ever, I know I have done some karaoke. I would say it would be in the Neil Diamond range.
Oh boy.
Just strong vocal, sing along. You know, a lot of his songs have a sing
along. That's good. I like Neil Diamond. We won't quit our day jobs. We promise. You know what I like? Mark Cohn, Walking in Memphis. I love that song.
Walking.
That is my go-to karaoke. Let's see one. Let's see if there's one other. Oh, here's one that we can end on. It is travel related from our producer, pregame producer, Joel Goodling. How much money will producer Joel save by not traveling to Las Vegas anytime soon?
Very nice.
Millions of dollars.
I'm the other way. How much money will I not make?
Oh,
Baccarat. I'm a Baccarat guy.
You're Baccarat?
Baccarat.
Why? I don't even know how to play that.
You don't have to know how. You know why? Because the cards you're dealt determine the next decision made. You never determine a decision. All you determine is whether you're betting on yourself, whether you're betting on the dealer, or whether you're betting for a tie.
Okay.
And that's it. Once you're dealt your first two cards, you do not make a decision from that point on. The decision's already made based on the cards you were dealt.
I do miss the cheap blackjack table where you take advantage of the free alcohol. Like you're kind of running uneven. It's like the $5 table and you continue to play and they're giving you drinks that would ordinarily cost you $20 a hit. And so it's just, you come out even. You don't win any money, but a little bit of that. Well, I don't like the only thing I don't like about Vegas is the smoke-filled casinos. I don't like that. If you can get me to a smoke-free one, then I'll be okay.
Yeah. I haven't placed a bet in probably 10 years.
Okay.
It's not, I understand the enjoyment that people get from that energy that goes through your body, that thrill that you're experiencing. I have not experienced that in a long time.
I don't view it as betting. I view it as I'm losing money by putting that money on the table. It ain't coming back. So I'm just okay with it. Like I'm paying for this entertainment for the next hour or so. All right. That's all the time we've got. Anything else, Jim, before we wrap up?
And that sounds like we're just in that holding pattern again.
Yeah.
Of, hopefully we'll get these games in and that's where we are. And, certainly appreciate a lot of the feedback from the Kings fans we've getting on their broadcasts. And more so this year than ever. If we miss something, please tweet that you thought we missed something. Because there are some, there are some things that we're just not seeing.
Especially the road games. Especially. Yeah,
exactly. So it's, and I know at home there's a lot of people can do it. They would have the pause function so they could pause something and really, is that offside? Is that puck over the line? And that helps, especially this year.
Well, it's been a challenge. It will continue to be a challenge, but we'll find a way through it because frankly, there is no other way. We're going to have to find a way through it this year. Thanks as always for listening. Thanks to our producer, Jesse Cohen. We encourage you hit that subscribe button so you get new episodes each week. We'll try to keep this guest thing going. Maybe we'll do another interview here or there in the next couple weeks. But in the interim, stay safe, enjoy the hockey, and we'll see you next time.